Welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Alwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we're checking in with the best and worst of April Fool's Day 2021. Spy Kids 20 years later. And
yeah!
Woo! Yes! And Ariana Grande joining The Voice. Yes.
Crazy.
Another great episode. I'm ready for you guys. Follow us on Twitter first at teatime underscore 33 and on Instagram. We're at teatime pod. All right. Before we get into the show, let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Okay, we are recording this Thursday, April 1st. Happy April Fool's Day, everybody. We're checking in with the best and the worst celebrity and corporate April Fool's jokes of this year and yesteryear. Kate, start us off with your thoughts.
First of all, I have seen a lot of discourse about like, let's just skip it this year. Let's skip April Fool's Day. It has been a bummer of a year. We just don't need that kind of energy. And I agree to a certain extent, and I agree even more because I feel like we have witnessed the Black Friday-ification of April Fool's Day, which is to say that yesterday, all these little brands started releasing these little teasers that smelled a little fishy. Cartoon Network sent out a press release saying they were going to rebrand as Cartoon Network. I don't know what that's about.
Oh, good.
Teletubbies on Twitter, like, we're going to get into Bitcoin and NFTs.
Wow.
Volkswagen was going to rebrand as Volkswagen. And I'm like, it's March 31st. It's not April 1st. There's a day for this. It's called April Fool's Day, not April Fool's Week.
True.
We cannot do the Black Friday thing where all of a sudden we're going shopping at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving and that's Black Friday. Like, that cannot happen to April Fool's Day. It is as bad enough already. And it's just the brands, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's the brands and they have ruined April Fool's Day. And we're going to get into that more. Not that it was ever good to begin with.
Yeah.
But, like, I just, if your April Fool's joke needs more than 24 hours of setup, just skip it.
Yes.
Just don't do it. I just don't need it in my life. So we saw this happening yesterday. We were like, I guess we should check in with like celebrity April Fools. Cause someone always says something stupid. A couple years ago, there was like the Justin Bieber pregnancy thing that like went horribly awry.
Someone does that every year. No one learns.
So far, it's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. for you guys. And no one has done that yet that I've seen. However, I was, you know, scrolling the interwebs for some celebrity April Fool's content, and several headlines started with Piers Morgan leads the celebrity April Fool's ... And I was like, this can't be it. This can't be all we have. I was like clicking through and it was like Piers Morgan epic April Fool's Day prank. I was like, Piers Morgan has never done anything epic in his life. His whole April Fool's Day thing was he was like, I'm coming back to Good Morning Britain, which is what he got kicked off after, you know, being racist towards Meghan Markle. I was like, is that this is literally it? This is what you're running with for a headline?
I saw all of those headlines and just vehemently skipped all of them. There's just there's no good article that starts with Piers Morgan.
No, absolutely not in the history of humankind. And it was just incredibly slim pickings this year. I mean, that was it. Like that. And then it was like random brands. The brands have just taken over April Fool's and the celebrities are just like sitting it out this year, which is good. Yeah. That's the right call.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, it was very, the brands, you know, it's very much like, you know, that Twitter account, brands saying bae, where they try to like, they're like, oh, we're cool, you know? Well, Peeps and I guess the Green Giant, which is a vegetable brand, you know, the big Green Giant guy. And they were teasing cauliflower flavored bunnies, like those marshmallow Peeps bunnies, but cauliflower flavored. And me, a dumbass, was like, oh, what? And I texted my friend and he was like, this is definitely April Fool's. And I was like,
okay but to be fair, what day did you see it on?
Okay, yes, I actually saw
March
it like
30
like,
fucking first.
I, so they true. Were doing April it Fool's before. Day. I swear to God, they were doing it like 5 days ago.
And you can't was, do that.
That's not right. That
that's
is not right.
Against the rules.
Yes,
it is. It pisses me off.
Yeah, I trying to contribute to this category was like browsing through all the slideshows that people make about like best corporate April Fool's jokes, haha. And I have come to the conclusion that there's literally just nothing. There is no good corporate. And I could be wrong, you guys, if you have feelings about it, feel free to let us know. But, you know, looking through these articles, it's like Taco Bell buys the Liberty Bell and it's like sculpted bacon mouthwash. And it's
good one.
Starbucks did like big, enormous vats of their coffee cups. I'm like, guys, I don't think this is it. I just don't. I think we should maybe just, you know, close that chapter of our collective lives on April Fool's. I don't know. I just, none of them work for me, but maybe I just like don't have joy in anything.
I totally agree. Well, you know, as we were looking through all of this, I was like, is it the year? Has it been ruined? Or has April Fool's just never been good? Has there ever been like a truly good celebrity or branded April Fool's joke? So I ask you, do you have a favorite? Is there a good one that you can think of where you were like, yes, that made my life and the world better for existing?
Didn't Netflix do something where they inserted an actor in every single one of their categories? Do you remember this? I'm going to look this up. Amelia,
wait, that's kind of funny.
They did a thing with Seth Rogen a while back where they pretended like they acquired his entire life and like his all of like his funny. Dreams.
That's kind of funny. Netflix is kind of good at that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the jokes that are pretty good. Only one that I could think of ever. Like looking back and seeing clips of and enjoying was when this is embarrassing of me, but Pat Sajak and Alex Trebek swapped spots on April Fool's Day, like in the 90s. And Pat Sajak hosted Jeopardy with no warning, and Alex Trebek hosted Wheel of Fortune with no warning, which I feel like is funny.
That's kind of cute.
That is looking funny.
In 2016, Netflix said every category was associated with John Stamos, which like actually kind of good.
That's kind of funny.
That's funny.
I wish it wasn't John Stamos. Funny. We're anti-John Stamos on T-Time for the most part.
It's hard to keep track.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's hard to keep track. I don't blame you.
It is. We should have done like a, you know, 10 things we love about Paul Rudd for April Fool's Day and kicked off the podcast
damn
with
it.
That.
Oh,
do you know what? That would have been really fucking funny if we would have started and been like, here's what, you know, Pete Davidson did today that we're just loving and done all of our...
Oh,
least
shit.
Favorite people.
It's
hindsight 2020.
Oh, man.
Maybe next year.
Next year.
All right. Let's move on. Let's do relationship news. Not worth the tea. And this week in social media, Kate, go ahead.
I guess kind of the big celebrity news this week is that Ariana Grande, pop princess, has joined a favorite of Midwestern moms everywhere, The Voice.
It's big news.
Big news for my mom, your mom. And at first I was like, no. Like, you don't have to do this. You're basically Taylor Swift. You're like up there with, I mean, it goes like Beyonce, Rihanna, you know, 700 feet of crap. And then like Taylor Swift and then like Ariana Grande, pretty much on the same level in terms of like fame.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you have to do this? Like, are you on the same level as fucking Blake Shelton? But then I was thinking about it. And the four current voice coaches with Ariana Grande, she's replacing Nick Jonas, are Kelly Clarkson. Great. Lover would die for her. Blake Shelton, who at this point, it's just like he's like cemented to that chair.
Oh, my God.
John Legend, who's huge. mm-hmm. and Ariana Grande. I was kind of like, you know what? Those are kind of heavy hitters. She kind of fits in to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I could honestly totally come around. I was like, you know, it's a different audience for her. Different true. Audience for The Voice. She can win over the moms. You know, she can bring the stands.
That's true.
She can bring Gen Z and millennials to The Voice. But then I saw this tweet that just killed me. This is from Melissa Lozada Oliva. She said, Ariana Grande being on The Voice makes me sad in the way it makes me sad when cool girls from high school are like, it's day 72 of my baby being 4 years old. My husband had a hell of a week at the real estate office. Another day in New Jersey.
Oh, God.
Then when you think about it, it's like, God, her album kind of flopped. She's engaged to a realtor. And now she's on The Voice. Like, I don't know, Ariana.
I know.
I don't it's know. True.
However, I will say this is a really easy win. It's a softball to like win public favor. Remember when Miley went through like one of her many transformations and did The Voice and then like everyone in America loved her again after truly hating her for an entire decade? Not me though. And it's kind of like, it's just an easy win. You know, it gets everybody, not that she has like fallen out of public favor at all in the last couple of years, but it just, it's a softball for her and her likability factor in America. So sure.
And a lot of money probably.
And it's, I honestly think it is, and you can disagree, but it's more prestigious than a chair on American Idol.
Yes. Oh, no doubt. Yes. Without a doubt. And really, the judges are the stars of The Voice. Like, you cannot name a single person who's ever won The Voice or been
you
on The
can't.
Voice.
You can't. You really can't.
And it's just there to, like, make the judges seem likable and, like, be sort of, like, watching them. So, I mean,
so
it, is
true.
A, it is a star vehicle for her to a certain extent. So, like, it's fine. I approve.
Sure. The thing I want to talk about in this category, because it doesn't fall really under anything, but I do want to talk about him, is I feel like we are not paying close enough attention to Mike Posner, because Kaya will understand. I helped The Ringer plan and go to South by Southwest like 2.5 years ago, and I still get PR emails like every day for all these publicists being like, my artist, this and this, release this. Anyway, I got this random email this week that said, Mike Posner to climb world's highest mountain, Mount Everest, raising money for Detroit Justice Center. And I was like, what the hell? It literally stopped me in my tracks. I delete those emails on site. I opened it and was like, I got to find out more about this. Mike Posner is so interesting, or more interesting than the average, I don't know, EDM pop CB list artist, I would say, even though the bar is kind of low.
Generous to put Mike Posner on the B list. Continue.
Regardless, okay, I'll talk about he's back on the rise in a minute. Anyway, so he has announced that he is going to climb Mount Everest this spring. He has been training for the last year in intensive high altitude training in Colorado. Amazing. And then he's raising money for the Detroit Justice Center, which is a nonprofit law firm working alongside communities to create economic opportunities, transform the justice system, and promote equitable and just cities. And it's because he's from Detroit. His dad, who passed away in 2017, was a criminal defense attorney for 40 years and was like very affected by his death. Anyway, this is amazing. And then I remembered this man walked across America a couple years ago.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Got bit by a rattlesnake, had to relearn how to walk, and still fucking walked across America, which is amazing. Anyway, I just feel like we got to pay more attention to Mike Posner. He's like very popular on TikTok right now for Cooler Than Me and then Please Don't Go, which are bangers. I just feel like as a society, we should pay closer attention to him.
It's true. I remember the rattlesnake story and I was like, what the fuck has this man been up to?
Yeah.
But wow, Everest, he's not stopping. I feel like if I got bit by a rattlesnake walking thousands of miles through the desert, I would just be like, I'm done. I've done my thing. Like,
absolutely.
I've been outdoors and now I'm going to stay inside.
Right.
So I respect that.
Also, he's really shooting high. Like, I don't know what he does next after climbing Mount Everest, but who knows? Maybe he'll go to space. Anyway, pay attention to Mike Posner. I would love that. Is my recommendation. Okay. Total pivot. You know we like to talk about weird food stuff, and this is from Kaya. Thank you for sending this to me, Kaya. I appreciate it. Okay, Disneyland. They are big corn dog people. Actually, the corn dogs are quite good at Disneyland, I have to say. But they have created a special corn dog that is panko crusted and has a pickle wrapped around the hot dog itself. And then to top it off, you get served a little side of peanut butter.
Oh,
so picture it in your heads. I'm sure we'll tweet it out. It's as disgusting as you can imagine. It's $13.
Damn.
Which is hefty price for food poisoning. And I just ask why.
Well, I think go ahead, please.
It's the peanut butter that ruined it. It is. It's the peanut butter. I was looking at the quote, like our retweets on Twitter, and I've never seen something more divisive. A food item more. Some people were like, I need this in my mouth right now. Other people were like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. It was like completely divided between like yes and no. I personally think it sounds good, but you got to give me like mustard. Like I can't do the pickle and the hot dog and the corn dog with peanut butter. I don't understand that part of it.
Do you think it's too much texture though, Kate? Because you got the panko, which is crunchy, the pickle, which is also crunchy but cold, and then the corn dog, which is quite soft. So I just don't know.
I think it's an adventure for your mouth.
Not great for people with sensitive teeth like myself, I feel like.
Oh, that's true.
I also have sensitive teeth.
Yeah. Biting down on that pickle and then the hot dog. That's a lot of different temperatures.
I assume the pickle would be warm. Like a fried pickle.
Would it?
Fried pickle's warm?
Yeah, you're right.
Oh my God. You're right. Oh my God. Also, we'll send out this photo, but the pickle is quite thick. It's not like a thinly sliced pickle.
I don't like that. And would you need milk too for the peanut butter? Because I feel like you would.
Yeah. Also, like, yeah, the peanut butter is. I think that
peanut
was just a joke.
Out.
Like,
I'm out on the peanut butter altogether.
Oh my God! That's all I have to say about that. We can keep going.
I would eat it. I would eat it. I would try it.
Now for some actual pop culture news. Amelia.
Okay, so on Tuesday, I don't know if you guys are following this Real Housewives saga, but it's been all over Twitter and actually over TikTok a lot too. Jen Shah of the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which was kind of a runaway hit, she was recently on Tuesday arrested in connection with running a nationwide telemarketing scheme, which is exactly what you think it is. In a statement from the freaking Justice Department, the Department of Justice. So we're talking like it was on the FBI website. She and her first assistant, Stuart Smith, because the running gag in the series is that she has like 15 billion assistants. And so it'll like come up with their name and then it'll be like first assistant, second assistant, blah, blah, blah. So they were charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud in connection with telemarketing and conspiracy to commit money laundering. Just for reference, one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering carries a maximum prison sentence of 20 years. So,
and how many counts?
Just one.
Oh, okay. Still.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's not good. And they were saying on multiple social media accounts, including this account on Twitter called Faces by Bravo, the cast was filming a group trip episode. They always do that, all the housewives. It's usually like a mid-season kind of thing that they do. I guess Jen received a call and told producers she needed to leave because her husband was hospitalized, and then she subsequently left, and the cast was then getting ready to leave when the FBI showed up looking for Jen. Yeah, and they filmed the feds talking to the other housewives.
Oh, whoa.
I know.
That's great.
That's
content.
Juicy. It's so juicy. And then someone else, there's a video circulating on TikTok of Jen allegedly making a telemarketing call about student loans. And it sounds a lot like her. It's one of those, you know, I'm sure you've gotten one of those calls where it's like, hi, your student loans are, you know, you still need to make $5,000 worth of payments. And they just come up with these lies. They're just flat out lies. And then they drag you into this whole conversation. And then they try to swindle money out of you. Like old people fall into this trap a lot.
My God.
It's really fucked up. It's really fucked up. Yeah.
Wasn't there this whole thing, Amelia, where like people know she was like living much more lavishly and people were like, that doesn't really add up, but we don't know how. Like she had this very luxurious lifestyle. No,
very,
it makes sense.
Yes. Luxurious. Mm. She has something called she calls it the Shah Chalet, which is their home, but apparently they were just renting it. And everyone was kind of suspicious because her husband, he is only like an assistant coach on the Utah Utes football team. So he's probably not making like millions of dollars a year. Mm-hmm. So everyone was like, this seems like it's adding up. But honestly, as a Real Housewives fan, you dream of white collar crime as good as this.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm sure Andy Cohen, he was so giddy when this all went down.
Oh my God.
I know.
So now will this next season, I guess, wow, I might have to start watching this show. This is like really juicy.
I think you would really like it. It's really fun. And the first season was really fun too. And Jen is crazy. She's just like a crazy woman.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
That's insane. Oh my God. Okay. Oh, and we're ending with some good news though.
Yes, we are ending with some good news. Kirsten Dunst was on the cover of W and she debuted a baby bump. And this is her second baby with Jesse Plemons. They have a son who's two and his name is Ennis. So happy
congrats to her. Happy for you, Amelia, and happy for her as well.
Thank you. Big week for me. Yeah, yeah.
It is actually a big week for you.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Let's do it. Let's dive right in. Let's do cringe mode. Spy Kids, the 2001 classic. Did people ask for this? No. Were people confused when Amelia posted it on Instagram? Yeah. But you know what? That's the beauty of having this podcast is you never know what you're going to get. We're going to dive in and take this as seriously as we did the Nicholas Sparks movies. So strap in, you
guys. So not very.
Craig, not very. Okay, so let's get right into it. Kate, you want to take us through the plot, please?
I will do my best. It's the 20th anniversary of this movie. I definitely saw it in theaters when I was 6 years old. I have a weirdly good memory of it for being six, which I guess means it just stuck with me. Wow. And Spy Kids pretty much summed up by the title. There are some spies and they're kids. Their parents are spies. It's Carmen is the girl and Junie is her younger brother. And their parents are Carla Gugino and Antonio Banderas, who have just like, you know, they've been spies this whole time. They get captured by this evil mastermind, Fegan Floop, incredible villain name, who runs this like creepy castle of inventions. He has like taken former spies, turned them into these creepy minions. The parents get captured. The kids have to go rescue them, obviously. And they do that. And there are a lot of creepy thumb minions and a lot of bad CGI. And that's pretty much it. Did I miss anything huge?
No, that was great.
No, yeah, it has a happy ending. They all
it
live
does.
Happily
they
after.
Save the day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, let's do some highlights. So it's a spy movie. I love all the dumb spy shit. You have the mom in her bathroom. She's plugging in her little spy password on her makeup compacts because it's
so
actually
good.
A keyboard. That was fucking great. They have a car that like goes from the highway, dives headfirst into the ocean. It's a submarine now. I will be endlessly amused by all the little inventions. They had bubble gum that you spit it on someone, it kind of explodes. Whatever. I'm a sucker for this stuff and I love it.
It was so good. 2001, incredible year for like cheesy spy stuff. This is also the year Alias came out a couple years after this movie. And she, you know, Jennifer Garner in Alias also has like all these crazy gadgets. And my theory is that 2001 was like the perfect year for crazy technology in spy movies because it was like we had some technology. We had an idea of what the internet and what technology could do. But like no one really knew how or like what the limits were. So now we have all these fucking Bourne movies and like they have to be based in reality because now we all know how like things work. But in 2001, we didn't fucking know. We still had dial-up internet and stuff. So like
so
our minds were more free to imagine that like a spy, you know, computer could be hidden in a makeup compact.
What an incredible point. Catherine, you know, that was
are
lovely.
The limits of our imagination in 2001 were just limitless.
Yeah, it's like when they made future movies and it was like a flying car. And now here we are in 2021 and we basically, probably Elon
right.
Musk has
it's
one,
like Black
it.
Mirror. It's like our reality, but it sucks. Like now we just know better. It's
turns
horrible.
Out technology sucks. Wow, good point.
Damn. Yeah.
Also, biggest highlight for me is Junie, the youngest brother played by Daryl Sabara. Junie in this movie is very relatable and very cute. He struggles with warts. He struggles with anxiety. He wears diapers at night, so maybe not that relatable as I'm talking about this out loud. He starts the movie and starts his spy journey, hanging on for dear life. He's attached to multiple people and objects going like hundreds of miles per hour, and he's like hanging on by a thread. And at the end of the movie, he is running this shit. He's rappelling down on wires. He learns how to scuba dive basically instantly. He poops in a submarine. I don't know. He's a very funny, great character, and I love him very, very, very much. I didn't want to like him because of the Meghan Trainor of it all. Now, before I revisited this movie, every time I look at him, I think of those paparazzi pictures of them buying sex toys, but now my mind has been cleansed and now I can picture him in this light again. It's great.
Yeah, we've reclaimed Daryl Sabara for
yes,
Spy
we
Kids.
Have. Yes, we have.
Yeah, okay, so we picked this movie. We were like 20th anniversary, like we gotta do it. I thought it was gonna be one of those where I was like, oh my God, like this is so bad. Like I was really worried going back, but actually this movie is one, very well written. It has some really funny wordplay. The acting is above what you would expect for a kid's movie. The parents are really good. We'll get to them. The kids are really good. They have a really good dynamic. They're like, I like that it lets them be kids. You know, it's not like, it's not like, you know, whatever these movies are now, these Disney Channel movies or whatever, where, you know, the girls have perfect ringlets and like they're wearing makeup and it's a 17-year-old playing a 13-year-old. It's like, no, they're just kids. They're like regular kids. And yeah, obviously some of the CGI or whatever is silly and cringy. Just, you know, the whole thing is cringy and silly, but it's actually very well executed and like very well written and plotted out. I actually thought it was good.
Same. I too love the dynamic between the kids and the parents, but I don't know. They're just very funny when they go back and forth. Like I will forever love that scene where he puts on the spy glasses and he's like, ew. And she's like, what do you see? And he's like, you. It was just like, it's very much like a sibling kind of relationship.
Yeah,
and I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also love that this movie is a tight 90 minutes. Again,
yes,
you know?
Always.
Always. We don't
Every
need
time.
Any superfluous like plot stuff that like really doesn't end up contributing in the end. So really appreciate that. And then also, I just want to briefly talk about the amazing house, which is in like the middle of nowhere on a cliff by a sea. Don't know where this is supposed to be, but it is beautiful. It's incredible. They have an indoor gym structure that I have been jealous of for 20 years. I don't know. It's just, I love it. Give me more of that house.
Yeah.
Really
like,
good.
Romanticizes like spy people like that lifestyle, and I think this like has been ingrained in our brains for a long time. That's a very sexy but also very like powerful thing, which Amelia I know we'll talk about a little bit later. So let's do some lowlights first. Kate, what do you got?
This is more of a question than a lowlight. I just want to put this out into the world and discuss it. Did the parents in this movie have to be that sexy? Were they too sexy for a kids movie called Spy Kids? We're talking about Carla Gugino and Antonio Banderas, who like on their own, sitting in their fucking house watching Netflix, are like 10 times sexier than the average person. So I get it. Like, I understand that the scale is different for them. However, we're in this movie where, you know, all these throwbacks to their past life, like, you know, they're doing all this cool spy stuff. They have all this chemistry, which is great. But like, they also are all in leather. They're in red and black clothes. There's so much hair gel happening. There's so much eyeliner. Carla Gugino is like the spy mom. Her whole role in this movie is to be a mom, which again, like moms could be sexy. Like that's fine. But I'm like, did we need the low cut V? Do we need the leather pants? Do we need the chokers? It's fine. It's fine. I mean, it was great. I just found it a little bit distracting and I was just like, are they too sexy?
Here's my thought on it is that, you know, in some animated movies, there's like really adult jokes where like the kids don't get it and the parents are like, ha ha, yeah, this is like kind of for me. They do a little like wink wink to the parents in most children's movies. I feel like there's not a wink wink, but more of like a, here's a favor to all the parents who are watching. Right. My kids will put these two incredibly sexy actors and make a little bit of, you know, you can look at Antonio Banderas or Carla, you know, just you can look at either one of them if you'd like.
I like that.
Yep. I agree.
Okay. Speaking of the CGI, there was, there's a little bit to be desired here in this movie. Particularly the underwater scenes, I felt, were the weakest of them all. There was a scene where they are swimming through a cave of sleeping sharks and, you know, whatever. I think at the time when I watched it, we all probably were like, this is amazing. But of course, some of the CGI doesn't hold up. Which will bring me to my later point is like, we should just redo these movies. Like, I like them a lot, but like, we got a lot of good stuff going on now in technology. So
I agree. But also, these movies were like kind of the pioneers for like the weird movie technology. I think the 3D one, which I think was, imagine was the third one, was the first movie I ever saw in 3D. Like that video game one. Remember where they enter the video game world and like, it's really trippy. Like that was one of the, I think that was the first 3D movie I ever saw. And then there was a 4D one where it like, you smelled the movie. I think that was either the fourth or fifth one. And like you could go to like the special 4D theater and like your chair would move or something.
I feel like 4D really came and went. Like, I think I'd probably watch also one 4D movie and everyone was like, oh,
no,
maybe
thank
this is
you.
Not a good idea.
If I wanted to go to Disney World, I'd go to Disney World.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, you know, listen, Spy Kids franchise, it was risk taking. A pioneer. And we should respect that.
Agreed. What else is a low light, Kate?
Real low light for me. Fegan Floop. I just really like that name. He's made all these CGI creatures or these like creepy creatures. And they feature on this TV show, this kids' TV show that Junie watches. And they're so fucking creepy. He makes them perform these songs and they live in like this creepy world. Right. And they sing these songs that it turns out like you slow it down and they're like, help us. Fegan Floop is a madman, which is really creepy too. And I just found it really freaky. I found it freaky then. And then when I watched it now, I was like, wow, this brings back some trauma associated with this movie. Cause this is, and you know, kids shows are freaky. Like if you ever watch like PBS or like Nickelodeon, whatever those like creepy shows, they're always like a little icky and like freaky.
Yeah, they are.
I'm like, can we not have just cute characters? So that was realistic, but it was a low light for me.
It was intense, definitely. Also on that note, when he would have the model clay of the secret agents of their faces, and he did a really good job making the faces, and then he would make them into his Fooglies or whatever. I don't understand how he can make the clay of these, like a Antonio Banderas look exactly like him, but they can't even get Alan Cumming's face on a teeny tiny doll correct because the Floop action figure literally looks nothing like him. It looks more like the other villain guy, not the minion dude, but the agent guy. And it's just like, you can put like a 5-inch clay piece together that looks exactly like Antonio, but you can't get like a centimeter wide like action figure. I just, whatever.
Come also, on, props could, department.
Exactly. Or I was going to say, use your little CGI, but throw a couple, you know, a little bit just CGI Alan Cumming's face on that thing and then.
Truly.
Yeah. Interesting. I also feel like this is more general low light, and you guys can definitely disagree if you feel like it. But when we do cringe modes that we watch once as like children or adolescents and then we revisit them now, I feel like when I watch it, I have like a little, my heart, you know, gets tugged a little bit, my heartstrings. For some reason, it's like nostalgic or like heartwarming for me to watch. And I definitely did like this movie at the time when it came out. Mm-hmm. But rewatching it, I was not like, oh, Spy Kids, like, oh, the thumbs. Like, there was no warm, fuzzy feelings that came from my youth. And maybe because it was really scary at the time. And I, like, can watch it with adult eyes. But I don't know. This doesn't tug at the heartstrings like I thought it maybe would.
Maybe Spy Kids was, like, the Avatar of its time where, like, everyone saw it in theaters, but, like, nobody wants to watch it twice. You know, where it's, like, it was, like, a big technological thing and, like, it was, you know, groundbreaking or whatever. It was a big deal for its intended audience, but like nobody cares about it anymore. I don't know. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I agree. It did not tug my heartstrings either.
A lot of good theories out of you today, Kate. You're really firing. Okay, let's do what has aged the best and the worst. Amelia, what's your opinion?
I would say spy movies are just, they're really fun. Watching this, I was like, you know, this is great. Like Liz said in the beginning, like, give me more of the makeup lady or woman, the mom, sorry, yeah. Doing the little code. And then also the story in the beginning of the film, which is Carmen asks for a bedtime story and the mom is just like, okay, I'll tell you a story. And it's just like the story of her husband and her meeting each other. And they're like two opposing spies who end up falling in love. That's like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I think Mr. and Mrs. Smith ripped off the mom's story from the beginning.
Absolutely.
So good for them.
Yeah. If anyone tries to come for us, Mr. and Mrs. Smith was released in 2005, people. This is 2001 we're talking
you.
About. So,
so Robert Rodriguez should sue.
He really should. Kate, what do you think has aged the best and the worst?
This is either aged the best in terms of accuracy and predicting the future, or the worst in terms of just the fact that this came true. But the character of Fegan Floop, played by Alan Cumming, is literally Elon Musk. And I looked this up on Twitter to see if anyone else had tweeted about this. And only one other person had ever tweeted the words Fegan Floop and Elon Musk together.
What?
In a tweet. But they did come to the same conclusion as me. And this dawned on me when I was watching this movie. And Fegan Floop is introducing his little like robot creation, this like little boy that he has created as a robot. Very normal. And he says his name is X52495. And I was like, this is Elon Musk. Because obviously they named their kid X12, whatever the hell. So then I started thinking about it more. And Fegan Floop, listen, he's a visionary guy. He wants to be famous. He very much is like the face of all of these ideas. He wants to be a celebrity. He definitely would be on Twitter if they had Twitter at this time in this, you know, imaginary world. And I just feel like there are a lot of similarities. And it's a little worrying that we have someone that's this close to a cartoon supervillain existing in our world.
We need a Junie now.
We
to
do.
Help him get back
we
to
do.
The good side.
Only the spy kids can take down Elon Musk.
It's probably true. My age, the best opinion. I love that no one really did a worst, even though there's probably things we could have talked about. Age the best is Antonio Banderas.
Mm.
Woo, just great. Iconic career. He toes the line between action, intense, scary man movie. And then he's like in Shrek and Shrek 2 and like that franchise. He does Spy Kids. Really toes the line. He's got the range and he's just made a fucking great career for himself. And he still looks just as great now as he did in 2001.
Incredible. Love him.
All right.
Happy.
Okay, let's do MVP. We all picked different ones this time. Mine will be quick. My MVP is the thumbs because
we gotta talk about the thumbs at length. Please.
Okay, great. Never mind. Okay, so the thumbs is like the thing from Spy Kids. I think every person around our age or even above or below can like picture these thumbs in their head before they go to sleep at night. And they just are iconic characters. And they
Describe them for someone who has never seen this movie. What do they look like?
Okay, thank you, Kate, for that prompt. I will Google just so I get it. Oh my God, someone did Mama June's face photoshopped on a thumb. That's not nice. Okay, so here's a thumb. This is the third image on Google Images, Mama June. Okay, so anyway, the thumbs. Their head is a thumb, their arms are two thumbs, and their legs are two thumbs. They're all thumb. And they are wearing a jumpsuit that is red and has like a little V-neck in it, actually. It's kind of tight. Now that I'm looking at it.
Tight.
Wow.
Tight. They'll
sexy?
Have like, well,
no.
Maybe. Okay. No. Yeah, their nails are well trimmed. They've got no cuticle issues here. They're just a bunch of thumbs. And they are iconic. And they're evil, but they have no brains or they're like very clumsy.
Yeah.
Right.
They can just
the
be like programmed.
Is, like, they're all thumbs. Like, isn't that the word play? Like they drop something and he's like, sorry, they're all thumbs.
That's that screenwriting you were talking about earlier.
I know. It's pretty good. It's really committed to the bit, though. Like, imagine being the writer in the room for Spy Kids being like, okay, so here's the joke. The minions keep dropping stuff in their thumbs, and we're going to spend $100 million on the CGI to make them look like thumbs. Really
it
tough
works,
sell.
Though. It really works. They,
it
like,
does.
Are great characters. Amelia, what are your thoughts on the thumbs?
I think, yeah, the thumbs were one of the really lasting impressions I had from this movie, and they're haunting, but also you kind of want to cuddle with them, but then probably not because they're gross.
They do
think, I don't know,
seem soft but sturdy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely very stocky. You can also see when they storm the safe house or whatever. It's like you can immediately tell it's the thumbs because they're very thick. And
right. They got broad shoulders.
They nice do. Build. They do. Yeah.
They are weirdly jacked thumbs. Like, why are they the thumbs are, so built?
Are the thumbs handsome? Would you guys say yes or no? Are the thumbs handsome?
Oh, my God.
The thumbs are in good shape. The thumbs are pretty jacked for thumbs.
Yeah, they are.
Have you ever seen Breaking Bad?
Yes.
You know Hank?
Yes.
He kind of looks like a thumb.
I think that's still like an insult or like a comment now on people. It's like, you look like a giant thumb.
Right,
we all
right.
have someone in our heads.
Well, you
like
thought Stanley Tucci was going to be in this movie.
I did, but I thought he was Alan Cummings. I didn't think he was the
okay.
thumb.
I thought you thought he was because he was a thumb because he's bald like that.
Oh, wow.
Also, did you see they had finger? Did you see the finger girl? The sexy finger lady?
No.
There was a finger?
Like yes.
The thumbs are gendered? All thumbs are... male and the fingers are female?
Oh my God, I guess so. When Carmen, it was either Carmen or Junie maybe, where they drop into the lair where they're putting together the thumbs, and it was like a sexy nurse finger, and she was like, yeah, she was wearing like red nail polish.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Yeah.
Kate, normally you catch that. And me and Amelia are like, what? Where was that? Maybe it's just me.
I totally missed that
wake
one.
Wake up. Wow.
I apologize.
Good catch. So yeah, thumbs MVP for sure. I think for all
it's
of us
true.
A little bit. Well, let's talk about some other ones. Kate, who's your pick?
My MVP are the kids, you guys. Listen, they hold this movie down. They have gone on not really to have careers. Alexa Peña Vega is in a lot of bad movies. She married one of the guys from Big Time Rush. So like good for her. We all had that dream once. And like we said, Daryl Sabara married Meghan Trainor. So like he could be, I mean, personal lives seem to be good.
Yeah.
Professional lives, maybe not so much, but.
There's always time.
This
They're
movie
so young.
Was great. Yeah. They have their legacy, you know?
Mm-hmm. They do.
And also, so, I feel like if this movie gets remade, they will have great roles in it as well.
Oh
they would probably
God.
Sign on in an instant.
That is true.
Maybe we should do that.
I feel like they will remake this. I think you're right about that.
Yeah. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. Amelia, who is your pick?
I would say, you know, Alan Cumming, he's really funny in this. He's just, he's a chameleon, you know? Great American accent. I really like Alan Cumming.
I love your MVP picks.
Everything's better with a little Alan Cumming.
Truly. Yeah,
for sure. All right, let's do the lightning round before we wrap up. What is the most 2001 thing about this movie, Kate?
I picked Carla's wedding dress when they're sort of flashing back to how they got together, how they got married, how they had the kids. Carla Gugino's wedding dress is like a corset crop top and then like a white skirt. And she has like the 2001 like updo. She looks great, but I was like, this is insane. This is an insane outfit.
Yeah.
It was great.
I agree. Amelia?
Did you catch the iZone camera, which was the Polaroid's like really long rectangular camera, and it spits out like a little teeny tiny photograph, and I don't know, I was like, wow, I remember those cameras.
Shit. That's a great
That's
call
great.
Me and my sister had those. Oh my God,
yeah, love those.
Wow, good catch. Who is the biggest surprise cameo in this? I cannot believe we have not even said his name out loud yet, but
it
is George Clooney. He
Incredible.
Comes in from the top rope out of literally nowhere in the last 10 seconds.
Amazing.
As the man who delivers the missions, and he calls the kids firstly and is like, we got to send you away. And the kids are like, no, we take down everybody as a family now. But George Clooney is just like in this movie randomly. And it really made me realize that in 2001, George Clooney was not the man that George Clooney is in 2021. He did do Ocean's 11 the same year. Both came out in 2001. But like, I guess this is more on brand for George Clooney than I originally thought, but I was floored to see this man. And he's in the second, too.
Oh, really?
I was going to say that. Yeah, he's, which is kind of how you know it's like, okay. Like, you could have done one and done. The second one is like a little bit of commitment.
Yeah.
It's a good bit, though. I like that he shows up at the end.
Yeah, Spy Kids 3D, game over. Anyway, okay, who's your pick, Kate?
Fabulous. I mean, it's definitely George Clooney. I also want to give a shout out to Danny Trejo, who is in other Robert Rodriguez movies. He's in Machete, and his name in this movie is Machete, which implies the existence of a shared universe between Machete, which is an incredibly violent movie, and Spy Kids. So I guess Antonio Banderas' brother, who is Danny Trejo in this movie, is like this insane, like brutal, unless I'm misunderstanding the plot of Machete, like very brutal killer.
I think you're right.
Who then has a falling out with his brother, Gregorio Cortez in Spy Kids. And then they're friends again. And also IMDb says that Richard Linklater is in this movie as cool spy.
What?
That's what it says. I trust IMDb, but you guys always question my trivia. So maybe not.
That's funny. I agree.
I believe you.
Amelia, who's your pick?
I kind of love seeing Terry Hatcher as the evil secret agent lady who is, you know, just evil.
Tell the audience what happens at the end to poor Terry Hatcher.
Oh, right. So they're in they raid the kids' safety house and one of the jetpacks goes rogue and flies into her face. And the next time we see her hair, there's patches. There's only patches. Poor Terry Hatcher looks deranged.
Incredible. Incredibly tough luck. Yeah.
Yeah. Still beautiful.
Yeah, she muscled through this role. Okay. In your guys' opinion, why have they not remade this movie yet?
I mean, I think they will, but I think there were just an incredible amount of sequels to it. There were 5 Spy Kids movies. Oh, Jessica Alba was in one of them. They were like a family that was friends with the Cortezes. The kids kept coming back when they weren't even kids anymore. They were like fucking adults. All sorts of people got pulled into these movies. Sylvester Stallone was in one of them. They really just ran it into the ground, I think. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's been long enough. Maybe the nostalgia train is coming for Spy Kids, but not yet.
Yeah, they really grabbed everybody. If you just go Spy Kids cast, which I believe just encompasses the whole franchise, you got Holland Taylor, you got Joel McHale The Soup, you have Salma Hayek, you got a lot of Ricky Gervais. It goes on and on and on. Taylor Momsen, anyway, that's another story. But
amazing.
Yeah, ample room. All these actors are still around. Amelia, what's your opinion? Why have they not announced a remake or done a remake?
Honestly, watch them announce a remake tomorrow. Just like knowing our luck, that's what would happen. So
I know.
We're manifesting. Tea Time is manifesting Spy Kids remake.
Okay, that's fun. All right, let's do Tea Time's unanswerable questions. Kate, fire away.
My unanswerable question is, if you were a serious, very serious Oscar-nominated actor, would you make a fellow famous high school friend take down an embarrassing photo that they posted of you? This is a real unanswerable question. I had an opinion on this, and then I changed it. This is inspired by Rachel Bilson, who went on a podcast, on Dax Shepard's podcast, and talked about a picture she posted of her high school classmate, Rami Malek, when he was like nominated for his Oscar that he ultimately won. So they were in high school together. They were friends. They weren't just like randomly in high school. Like they were actually friends. And while he was up for an Oscar, she shared a picture of them when they were in high school and on a trip. And it's like pretty embarrassing of both of them. Obviously, Rachel Bilson has been beautiful forever. So like it's a less embarrassing picture of her. Rami Malek definitely experienced a glow up at some time in his life. Definitely like was pre-puberty. Like he looks much better now.
Yeah.
But you know, it's high school. Like everyone looks bad in high school. So she shared a picture from their senior year of high school on a trip to New York. And it's just really embarrassing picture. Rami looks, you know, goofy, has a gold chain. And she found out that he didn't like the picture. She's like, we were like teenagers. It was right before the Oscars, whatever. So turns out she found a message from him in her Instagram DMs. And she said, it wasn't like, hey, how are you? It was straight to, I would really appreciate it if you take that down. I'm a really private person.
Oh, that's weird.
So she took it down. And she goes, I was super bummed because he was so nice and we were really good friends. And I'm a big fan of not taking yourself seriously, especially at that level of fame and talent. But look, he wants to be super respected. It's his thing. So I respected it. I took it down, but I was just a little bummed at how it was handled. So if you're Rami Malek and you're nominated for an Oscar and you have this really embarrassing picture of you that's posted by your high school friend who also is famous, so like it's going to get some traction. Do you make them take it down? Do you just like leave it up, say whatever?
I would just, who cares? Honestly, it was so many years ago. By taking it down, I agree with her. Like, one, he handled it incorrectly. He was kind of a dick. You don't even preface it with, hi, how are you? You're just, take it down. I'm different now. It's just like, okay, people live long lives and we all go through changes. Honestly, happy for your glow up. You don't have to be a fucking dick about it, Rami Malek. Also, it just proves that he takes himself too seriously. And I don't like people like that. So fuck you, Rami Malek. I want nothing to do with you ever.
Wow. I don't even want to. We should just.
I'm sorry.
That's the answer.
Wait, Liz, you're a very private person. Yeah. You wouldn't want people to post a picture of you. Do you feel differently?
The photo in question is not even embarrassing. Well, maybe you guys feel differently, but I looked at the two of them and I was like, yeah, that's just a young Rami Malek and a young Rachel Bilson. Like,
exactly.
There's nothing weird about it. It's literally the two of them just smiling. And that's what I have a bigger issue with. If someone posted a photo of me smiling, be like, all right. Someone posted a legitimately embarrassing photo or did some harm to me, or I felt bad, I would be like, please, yes. But it's so weird. I was expecting so much worse. Also, the fact that he asked her to take this down, you know, now it sucks because like he made bigger headlines out of being a doorknob.
It's the Barbara Streisand effect. Yeah.
It's just like you could have, I mean, now it's news, Rami. So you played yourself. That's
and
what
even
it is.
Then, it's like, you know, you're campaigning for an Oscar. Like, good, all press is good press.
Right.
Like,
right.
Be like, oh, you won't believe this cute picture of this adored teen star, Rachel Bilson, and her friend, Rami Malek.
Yeah.
Who it makes him seem normal. It makes him seem fun to be friends with her. Relatable. We all look different as a teenager.
Totally.
And he's like up his own butt about it. And
it's bizarre.
I think it's really dumb. I get it. Like, I get wanting to be taken seriously. I get, you know, especially if Rachel Bilson kind of did it as like a fame grab, I could kind of see being annoyed by it. Like, oh, look at me. Like, I know this guy. I'm not like, super relevant, but you are. She is.
Yeah, she is.
It's not like she's being vindictive about it, though. You know, it's not like, haha, you were so ugly or something, you know? Like, I don't know.
Everybody wants a little clout. Rachel Bilson can have a little bit if she wants, like that she knew Rami Malek. That's
Rami Malek, you're going to be fine. It's okay.
Yes, agreed.
It's true.
I also need your guys' opinions on this because this is a big debate. And I feel like a lot of people, both online and in real life, are kind of talking about this post-vaccine, post-COVID world, knock on wood, God, please hear my prayer. And it's kind of talking about like all the plans that you like blanket statement. We're like, yeah, after this is all over, quote unquote, I'll see you. We'll do this. We'll do that, whatever. So there's this tweet that went really viral and it's from at Ciara, I-I-N, Ciarin. Normalize canceling plans without an excuse. I just don't feel like it anymore. And I feel like this situation we've all been in, this terrible pandemic, has brought upon people to reevaluate when they say yes to social plans and weddings and things that they possibly don't want to go to. And I'm curious, do you guys agree with this, that you can just say no and provide no excuse? Like, do you think we should normalize canceling plans without an excuse if you just don't feel like it?
As a noted flake, as my college friends who listen to this podcast can tell you, I think you got to come up with an excuse. I feel like if you're going to cancel at the last minute, as someone who does this a lot, the very least you can do is make up an excuse. You know, like that is the bare minimum.
That's
be like,
true.
I don't feel well. I'm tired. Like these are fine, but like just come up with something, you know, like be like, I have work in the morning. I mean, there are a million in the book, but like, that's just the bare minimum of respect is to come up with, like, have to take 10 seconds to think of something. Like, I guess being honest is important. So I guess if I didn't want to go, I could tell them that, but I just have an excuse. It's not that hard.
Amelia? Agreed. Yeah, I agree.
I feel like one sentence is needed after like a no or I can't.
Right. Like, I would be pissed if someone texted me and was like, hey, I'm not coming anymore. And I was like, why? And they were like, I don't know, just like didn't want to.
I'd
like at least lie to me, you know?
Right.
At least tell me your mom, I don't know, is sick. Like your dog died. I don't know. Come up with something.
Kate, there are many other excuses we can think of before that. But yeah, I agree. Okay, so I'll remember that next time, Kate, you tell me like, I'm tired.
I'll be like, Liz, my dog died.
You'll be like, oh my God. Right. Oh my God.
Amelia, what is your question this week?
So I had a few questions, but this is the final.
This
the
one final somehow.
Stage.
Yeah, this so one. Funny. Watch that happen this week in this outline.
Okay, so I guess there was a spring 2021 runway collection for Mugler, and there were these jeans that debuted on the runway, and you know, Bella Hadid wore them. I guess Irina Shayk wore them, and what they are, they're like high-waisted jeans in the front, and then in the back there's a butt, but it looks as if the denim
is made into a thong, but instead of actually cutting out the fabric for it to be a thong, it's like these two black panels. So I don't, it's just like the appearance of a thong. And Page Six just calls them thong jeans. So I was wondering, you know, we've seen the whale tail trend. We've seen, I feel like, actual denim thongs and stuff. Would you, are you ready to rock these new denim thong jeans once the pandemic is over? You want to look good out in the streets? I don't know.
I mean, I'm anti-denim overall, have been for about the past year. I feel like we have to ask our jeans expert, Elizabeth Kelly, for the real answer here.
I would sooner wear thong jeans than I would low-rise jeans, I think. Oh! At least these jeans cover Hadid's belly button, which is all that I require.
This is true. Actually, the cut of these, other than the thong part, is pretty flattering. From
quite
the front,
flattering,
they're just
yeah.
like well-fitted high-waisted jeans. It's just when you get to the back that right. there are issues.
Right. Although I'll say, though, that I believe, yeah, watching Bella Hadid walk down in thong jeans is not what Liz Kelly will look like on the streets, as Amelia says, walking in thong jeans. So I'll have to see a couple of real world practices before I make a real sure. decision on it.
It's going to be a no from me. But
right, fine.
I look forward to your decision.
See you guys in 2022 and a pair of these guys. Okay, that's it. Another episode in the books. Thank you to Kaya, our producer, who's back this week. Thank you, you guys, for listening. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Alwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.